Nemoto presents filmmaking giants. Yasujiro Ozu, the poet of everyday life. Narrated with Microsoft Azure using the Christopher voice. Running time, approximately 14 minutes. Yasujiro Ozu. Hello and welcome back to Filmmaking Giants Who Changed How We See the World. We have traveled through rooms that breathe, corridors that accuse, storms that teach courage, and edits that think. Now we kneel. The camera settles inches above the floor at the height of a child's gaze or a guest on a tatami mat. The frame squares itself to doorways and cupboards as if angles could be honest. The air contains kettle hiss, train hum, the soft slide of shoji. The drama is a daughter deciding whether to leave, a father deciding how to let her go, a family deciding what to do with all this modest love. Our guide is Yasujiro Ozu, a director whose films replace spectacle with candor and whose grammar, low camera, frontal staging, ellipses that skip the scenes most directors crave, changed what it means for cinema to be intimate. If Hitchcock taught us how to arrange fear, Ozu teaches us how to arrange acceptance. If Kurosawa wrote with weather, Ozu writes with rooms. He was born in Tokyo in 1903, the son of a merchant, raised in neighborhoods where laundry lines and telegraph poles cut the sky into rectangles you could learn by heart. He grew up close enough to the ground to know how the foot feels before the mind decides. Legend says he was a class truant whose report cards complained about daydreaming. Truth says he loved looking. When he joined Shochiku in the early 1920s, as an assistant, then as a director of brisk comedies and family dramas, film was still a new household device that Japan was learning to use. He studied Hollywood imports with what he later called gratitude and mischief. Lubitsch's economy, Lloyd's cheer, Chaplin's thrift with gesture. He took what was useful, laughed at the rain machine, and kept walking. The early films move quick and sideways. I Was Born, but follows two boys who discover that fathers are not gods. Tokyo Chorus turns a layoff into a domestic caper whose stakes are grocery money and pride. Dragnet Girl walks a gangster into a room where manners have been set out like tea and watches what happens. Silent cinema suited him because it made faces into sentences and cut scenes down to verbs. Even then he was simplifying. The camera lowered. The cutting slowed. He began to discover that if you make the frame a patient square and let actors sit in relation to lines and doors instead of to your ego, the viewer will begin to notice not only who speaks but how space makes them honest. Sound arrived and a generation of directors thanked the gods for microphones that could explain what wasn't clear. Ozu listened to the new toy, then refused to let it turn images into captions. The Only Son, 1936, is his first talkie. The story is a mother who sacrifices for a son who discovers how expensive dreams are, a city that misplaces good intentions. The sound is lamps and noodles slurp, polite voices turn tentative because pride has been wounded. He uses speech as an ornament, not a crutch. You can hear why his later films will need so few words. The rooms have learned how to speak. War took him into uniform, took him to Singapore, took away years he might have spent learning a camera's patience. He returned from service with notebooks full of sketches and evenings that stretched like corridors. He started quietly, with record of a tenement gentleman and a star he would work with again and again, Takashi Shimura carrying ordinary decency like a sacred chore. Then in 1949, late spring, a father, Chishiryu, and daughter, Setsuko Hara, in Kamakura live in a life that looks like weather. Errands, bikes, a cup placed just so, a smile that opens a day and closes a decade. The daughter will marry because she has come to the age when society suggests it and because she believes he needs her. The father will let her because he believes she needs herself more than him. Each will pretend for the sake of the other's peace. Ozu refuses to show the wedding. He shows everything around it. The busyness, the teasing, a no performance that makes the air ceremonial, a last bicycle trip where laughter sticks. After the daughter leaves, the father peels an apple alone and the peel lengthens until gravity decides. He does not cry. The room holds a tear that nobody lets fall. This is not restraint for its own sake. It is respect for a privacy that can survive even near a lens. People call his camera position the tatami shot, as if he had discovered an apparatus angle where ancestors can hear you better. The lens is low, about knee height, and the world is planimetric and frontal, doors stacked like sentences, faces held straight on, the edge of a table a horizon. He seldom moves the camera in the late films, not because he cannot, but because he trusts the viewer's eye to move without being shoved. He centers a kettle, a vase, a calendar, a corridor. He keeps the angle square not as minimalism but as courtesy. Face-to-face is not confrontation, it is fairness. He breaks rules gently. The textbook 180-degree law that keeps spatial orientation tidy? He will cross it without telling you, then reconcile you with a cutaway so honest you feel scolded for noticing. He stages conversation with both people looking slightly off camera so that the viewer sits in the empty space between them, a guest, not a judge. Between scenes, he inserts what critics called pillow shots, borrowing a term from classical verse. Images without characters. Teapots steaming, laundry flapping, smokestacks breathing, waves, telephone poles, trains. They do not mean in the way that a sermon does. They breathe. They place. They respect that lives happen in a larger order than plot. A montage that wants you to feel panic will cut fast. An OZU transition wants you to remember that patience is a physical fact. The time it takes for heat to boil water, for sheets to dry, for a crossing to tick red and then green. He learned to use these shots like commas. In early summer, the sky is irregular. He cuts to it the way a novelist returns to a refrain. In an autumn afternoon, smokestacks are friends who never stop telling the truth. He repeated himself, and was accused of repeating himself, because repetition is the backbone of family. Late spring, early summer, Tokyo story, late autumn, and autumn afternoon. The titles are schedules. The stories are variations on the same abiding situation, a household asked to absorb change without breaking. In Tokyo story, elderly parents visit children who live in cramped rooms and cramped calendars. The children do what people do when work and guilt compete. They try, they fail, they send the old to a spa, the mother dies, the good daughter-in-law who is no longer legally a daughter remains the person who knows how to be kind. OZU stages grief without drama. A fan turns, the room is too bright, condolences become a form of weather. The camera says, this is what we are like and it is enough. Technique keeps company with ethics. He preferred a limited shot scale. Many mediums, few close-ups. Close-ups reserved as a privilege earned by behavior. He trimmed, dissolves and fades out of his late practice. Straight cuts only because time in these rooms does not swoon, it advances. He used straight-on framings that some call planar, which is only a way of saying, he will not tilt the person into a metaphor, he will let the person be. He allowed humor into tragedy and never called it comic relief because life, properly observed, goes on embarrassing sadness with the mundane. A man crying wipes his nose. A mourning grandmother is interrupted by tea. An uncle remembers a vulgar joke and restores the room to breathable pressure. Actors learn to live at this temperature. Chisha Ryu, his everyman, walks like a man who never forgot his school shoes were a size too large. His gentleness is not soft. It is the firmness of someone who refuses to call his convenience a principle. Setsuko Hara, her smile like stained glass, becomes OZU's ideal of the daughter who understands more than she says and then, in later films, the widow or single woman who knows how to be generous without being punished for it. The deliveries are plain. The faces look just past the lens. People speak in complete sentences. They often repeat themselves as politeness. They hold silence as if it were a cup. They laugh at things too ordinary to record until you record them and discover how much air laughter adds to a film. Color arrives with Equinox Flower, 1958, and remains with Good Morning, Late Autumn, and Autumn Afternoon. OZU uses it the way he used black and white, as structure. A red teapot echoes a red dress echoes a red poster on a wall so faded you barely see it until you do. The echo binds scenes not by cause but by tone. He does not drench, he punctuates. The boys in Good Morning decide to go on a silent strike after their parents won't buy a television. The film becomes a study in petty economics and the way language is a machine that oils neighborhoods. Color is the pleasure of laundry, the blue of a sky unwilling to stay the same from shot to shot, the green of grass around a drain where young brothers plot their next errand. The palette is not a celebration of consumer abundance. It is a field set for human scale. You love trains. They enter as axial shots and leave as regrets. They make neighbors of distant people. In late spring, a train runs between father and daughter as if to say time is a species of transport and we do not choose its stops. In Tokyo story, a train outside a boarding house window keeps the room honest. He loved kettles and cups. He loved the way a door sliding open changes the mathematics of a conversation. He loved the rectangle of a hallway and whether this time someone would fill it or not. He loved, above all, the small lie told out of kindness and the way it dissolves under the light of the next day. The refusal to show climaxes is not coyness. It is an argument about where meaning lives. Weddings, funerals, confessions, slaps. These are easy emphases. Ozu usually skips them or frames their aftermath instead. He trusts you to imagine the ritual and to care more about the people who must live with its consequences. In late spring, the wedding absent, you are left with a room put back together, a father alone with an apple. In an autumn afternoon, a father arranges marriage for a daughter and discovers that generosity feels like injury. The last shot is not a triumph but a man in a kitchen with a bottle, accepting the bill for love. It teaches us to look at the seam rather than the patch. This quiet changed the craft. Paul Schrader called his practice a form of transcendental style, a way narrative can lead to stasis that opens into the sacred. David Bordwell mapped his parametric narration, where style carries pattern as strongly as plot. Shigehiko Hasumi asked us to see how anti-psychological the shots are, how they refuse to pretend the viewer can colonize a character's interior. Whatever vocabulary you choose, the effect is this. Ozu took away some of cinema's noisiest tools so that the remaining ones could do honest work. The low camera is an ethics. The frontal staging is a commitment. The pillow shot is a breath you owe to a day. He wrote with Kogo Noda, a friend whose beer and notebooks are in the DNA of these films, and shot with Yuharu Atsuda, who learned to place the rig so that the lens did not look down on anyone. The company did not move fast, they moved right. There is a famous photograph of Ozu on set, in socks, the camera squared to a sliding door, the director smiling as if he has finally gotten the world to hold still for a second. He joked that the films were all the same. He was being precise. They are. The differences are as important as the recurrence. That is how life is. He died in 1963 on his 60th birthday, leaving behind a grave marker carved with a single character Wu, Mu, nothingness. The character is not a melancholy, it is a reminder that emptiness is room. The films have that kind of room. When you rewatch Tokyo Story in a season when your own parents are frail, it has space for that. When you watch Late Spring the year your child leaves home, it meets you there. When you watch Good Morning after a day of trivial bureaucracies, you find rescue in a fart joke and a neighbor passing tofu. The cinema he built is not a museum. It is a home open to weather. Carry him into your work as conduct, not just as style. Lower the camera, literally if you shoot, metaphorically if you lead, so that faces need not climb to meet your gaze. Stage conversations so that the door is visible. Remember that doors represent choices and human beings cannot be understood without their exits. Let a breath live between scenes. Trust your audience with the work of connecting. Refuse to turn private dignity into spectacle. You will be rewarded with trust that makes bolder truth possible. Learn to skip the climax in favor of the day after. And when in doubt, put on the kettle. The sound will tell you what pace your story can honor. He changed how we see the world by asking us to see what was already there. He taught the camera to kneel without submission and to look without appetite. He asked us to accept that family life contains tragedies so quiet they could be mistaken for customs and joys so modest they could be mistaken for chores. He made films that end with rooms left to themselves and trains that do not wait. He told us, in A Grammar of Cups and Corridors, that love is mostly arrangement, and that arrangement, done with patience, is what art looks like when it grows up. Thank you for listening to this episode of Filmmaking Giants.